Are you having fun?
Yes!
Yay, this is fun. Now, because I've helped you understand some theory, lay a foundation of how your brain works, I want to help put it on the ground level as best I can. So let's talk about even something simple as, quote, changing your emotions. Let's talk about emotional flexibility for a moment. Because I want you, number one, to remember every emotion that we experience is directly labeled to a concept in your brain. A label. Anxiety, depression, sadness, fear. It's been learned. Your body's going to do its very best to interpret, your brain is going to do its very best to interpret according to your context, the context of your situation, what you are feeling. And it's going to fill in the gap. So, every emotion is linked to a concept that is an interpretation. So go back to the A plus B equals C. Everything has to pass through B. Perception, interpretation, meaning, sign a story, create a story. Your brain will fill in the gaps. It wants to. It's going there. Now here's a big term. Epistemology is the philosophical discipline of how we know what we know. Epistemology. It's a Greek word. The philosophy of how we know what we know. We should all have what is called epistemological humility. I'm not sure. I could be incorrect. I'm not certain. It seems this way to me. It appears this way. I think it may be this way. Once you say it is this way, I'm certain of it, be careful. You've now constructed a reality, and now you're going to act out that reality based on certainty. Humility, I'm not so sure. I could be incorrect. I don't understand. It seems I want to train you to be a cultural anthropologist. That means you go to a culture. You don't judge it. You don't interpret it by the United States standards. You're there living in the culture simply to understand the culture and pay attention to behaviors. Oh, that's odd. That's curious. I don't understand what that means. It seems this way. Help me understand in your culture what that is for you. Make sense? Because we're interpreting another culture through our already a priori understanding of that culture. Still with me? You need to go on YouTube. You need to look up different TED Talks on how human beings assign emotions to their animals. My dog is happy. My dog is anxious. My dog is sad. You need to listen to some critical TED Talks. They're going to describe to you that's you as a human being putting this on the animal. They're going to let you know. They're going to show you different scientific experiments that your dog is going to behave this way like it looks really guilty and shamed, even when they're not shamed. But your brain will say, my dog is being a bad dog, bad dog. They have used that phrase, good clinicians have used that phrase with the animal, bad dog, in different contexts and changed it up, used the same tone and different words, and the dog's going to do the very same thing. The dog's just trained to respond a certain way, and we're saying, see, my dog has got his tail down, he is feeling so much shame right now. Bad dog. Okay, that's completely a human construct that your brain is interpreting it and forecasting it on your loving animal, and as if you think you know what your animal is feeling, but it's purely what your brain is making of the situation. And these TED Talk good clinicians will let you know how really dumb you are. And frankly, Your dog just loves you and wags his tail or her tail. Okay. I'll leave it for you to go explore. So I want to show you the difficulty I would naturally run into when we're trying to show emotional flexibility and help my people that I'm working with have emotional flexibility. For example, the label that our brain will use for these sensations that we call anger. That's just a word. It's a word assigned to certain sensations that you've learned. Anger. So your brain now, like lemon, can see a yellow object, squeeze it, it's tart. Your brain already understands that word, lemon. And if you said that word in Chinese, your brain wouldn't do anything. If you said it in German, it wouldn't even see anything. It would go, what? What's that sound? Blah, blah, blah. What does blah, blah, blah mean? Blah, blah doesn't mean anything to my brain, but the sound of vocalization, lemon, or Mary had a little, oh yeah, your brain went there. It didn't say Mary had a little, I don't know, dog, cat. What did Mary have? Oh, she had a little lamb. Your brain is already predicting and going and knows where it's going. So the idea of anger is, remember, you can trace an emotion back to something that your brain is interpreting. The emotion we call anger is most often linked with this storyline in the brain. The difference between what should be and what actually is, we call frustration and I'm angry. So people who are truth and justice oriented, that's not right. That's wrong. And how you feel about it? I feel angry. Do you see what I'm saying? People who are truth and justice oriented, that's not the way it should be. That shouldn't be happening. You shouldn't be treating them this way. I'm angry. There's a should and an ought in their brain that they're comparing what actually is happening to, because they believe they should and ought. This should and ought not be happening, right? That customer service person should not have hung up on me. Are you kidding me? How do you feel about it? I'm angry. Okay. So anger is truth and justice oriented, and it also indicates a blocked goal. I was just trying to get over here and ran into 7 red lights. Hello, I'm late. I can't get there. How do you feel? Frustrated and angry. Oh, really? So when people have anger problems and they say, look, I'm tired of feeling this emotion called anger. Are you tired of it? Yes, I'm tired of it. Then what we're going to work on is delinking and changing the narrative in their brain about shoulds and oughts, so that it doesn't produce the emotion we call anger. But here's what gets tricky. People, human beings, don't want to change the narrative in their brain. They want to hold on to it and have a new emotion. I can't get you or myself or anybody a new way of feeling if your brain is holding on to your exactly way of seeing. I can't get it. But everybody says, I'm not letting go of this because this is the way it is and it's what's really happening and that's my story and I'm sticking to it. And how do you feel about it? I'm angry. I thought you told me you didn't want to feel anger anymore. I don't want to feel anger anymore. I'm just exhausted and I'm tired and I'm resentful. I can help change that emotion, but we've got to see this situation differently. What? What do you mean by that? I want to stand at a different angle and look at the same data that you're looking at, and I want to teach your brain. It doesn't have to be the way your brain is thinking. Well, I'm not letting go of that because my brain is mostly right. I mean, I'm right in what I'm saying. I'm not letting go. I mean, this is what should be. Are you telling me I should let go of what should be? Yes. Well, I'm not accepting that because this is the way it should be. But you're angry. I know, but I'm holding on to this and I want a brand new emotion. Do you see the two-choice dilemma? I can't get you a brand new emotion as long as your brain thinks you should be getting something that you're not getting. Could we move towards a place of acceptance? No, the day I accept that is the day I'm a quitter. I'm not a quitter. then you're going to be angry. You get to choose. Which do you want? So to have psychological flexibility and to change emotions and to be emotionally flexible, I want brand new acceptance, and I don't want your brain to ping to rigidified labels. I don't want you to automatically say, I'm angry. Why don't you come up with a new word? I'm bejeebered. What's bejeebered? I don't know, I made it up. And you probably don't feel as anger as when you feel angry. I feel angry. Oh, now your brain has to complete it because it pinged back to the data bank. It pulled that book off the shelf and it said, this is what that concept looks like, so act it out. Wait, just go bejeebered. Bajinga. What does Bajinga? Sheldon. Yeah, Big Bang Theory. In fact, we can change your emotions and make you more emotionally pliable by looking at situations differently and not pinging to your same old learned categories, but you have to work at it. Expand your emotional concept, the library in your brain. Expand your color palette. Instead of only happy, sad. If these are the only two data banks in your brain and you drink a Coke and I say, how are you feeling? You only got two. Right? You only got two concepts in your brain. Which one? Happy. Okay. Well, that Coke has been open for about 4 days. How are you feeling? Sad. Okay. We could learn to have better emotions if your only two colors on your color palette are black, white. Oh. You got anything in between? No. Black, white. So let's don't get into 50 Shades of Gray. I'm just saying. Could we just... That's advanced class. When you're all ready for that, we can go there, okay? We can go there. I got lots of good stories to tell you about changing neuronal pathways. We want a color palette. Oh, come on, have you ever done color swatches? And all you wanted was a nice, modern gray to paint your living room? How many grays are there? Holy Toledo! How many tans can you have? I didn't know you could have so many. How many whites are there? Oh, yes, 51 whites and 52 shades of gray. I was stunned to see this big old color swatch palette that you fold out like a fan. Okay? If we had more words for emotions, your brain would have a better data bank for specific situations versus, I'm getting ready to jump out of a plane. How do you feel? I'm going to die. Well, it's either adventure, your heart's pounding. We need lots of words in between. So the writer of one book that I'm reading quite a bit, I love dearly, How Your Brain Creates Emotions, Lisa Feldman Barrett. Watch her TED Talk. I have two links on my website. Watch her. She's world's best cutting edge, devoted her whole life to this. She's going to say, make up words for brand new emotions in specific situations. Learn words in other cultures. Do you know in other cultures they have words for emotions describing situations that we as Americans don't even approximate? Did you know that? In other words, we think our word for sadness is the same German concept for sadness, or Finnish, or Swedish. They have words for emotions to describe specific situations that we don't have. She said, learn foreign words and increase your emotional color palette. That way your brain has more categories to draw upon versus how do you feel? Angry? That's it? That's all you got? That's the only one word I know. Angry. Do you got any shades of difference? No. Frustrated? No, I'm angry. Oh, good Lord. I guess you're angry. Let's learn in between and increase our color palette. Learn new words for emotions. And I like this one. She suggests keep track daily of your positive experiences. Why? Cultivate the experiences you want to construct again in the future. Every experience you construct, experience, becomes an investment in your brain. Invest wisely. Practice does not make perfect. Practice makes permanent. The more you ruminate on negative stuff, the more you will ping back to ruminate on negative stuff. The more anxious you are, the more every day you will already learn to say, I'm already feeling anxious. Learn new words. It doesn't have to be that you feel anxious. Make up a word. Find a word in German. Find a word in Finnish for different ways to express what you're feeling. You'll have more flexibility, right? I'm not going to go through this, but briefly, bless you. I want you to do it later. Here's what you can do as a homework assignment. Anytime in your hula hoop that you begin to feel something, I want you to go through these steps as a homework assignment. I'm not going to belabor it because I want to get on to something else. Observe and describe the event that prompted your emotion. That guy cut me off. That person didn't say hi to me. I want you to write that event down. I want you to describe, I don't want you to interpret. Now remember, all of these are on the website. So you don't have to capture all this. They're all on the web. You can do it if you want, but they're all on the website. I want you to do your best only to describe. You know, when I take notes as a therapist, I try my best not to label nor interpret. I describe. I don't say this person's clearly a narcissist. Note to self. Histrionic female, clearly borderline. I don't do that. I do not label people. Okay? I try my best in any assessment not to give a clear-cut clinical diagnosis unless it fully meets an already established clear-cut clinical diagnosis. And even then, I don't use that. It's only for some other purpose if somebody asked me for it. I describe. Client appeared to be upset, was in an argument, got up, slammed the door, and walked out. Not with me, with their spouse. Seriously. Doesn't happen often, but it happens in my office. Somebody can't stand what's going on. They say, I am out of here. I am not putting up with it. And they slam the door and they leave. I look out my window and they're walking in the parking lot. Usually the other spouse looks at me and says, they'll be back. Happens all the time. 20 minutes later, spouse comes, knocks on my door. Said, yay, you made it back. Now, I don't go, clearly, anger and narcissism and sociopath. I don't do that. I just describe what happened. So I want you to describe what happened. I don't want you to interpret. I want you, an interpretation is that person's arrogant. Who are you to say that? That's a label. Just say, they appear this way. They appear to not engage. Be clinical. Number two, identify the interpretation in your brain of that event that prompted your emotion. Now, you feel an emotion. Now work yourself backwards. What was your brain's assessment? And why did your brain go there? Are you predisposed to go there? Does that make sense? Do you have a set of glasses that you automatically are predisposed to view the situation this way? Do you have a history? Because all it did was reveal it in you. I don't know that that's what's actually going on, but you're prone to interpret. So what is the interpretation that prompted your emotion, and what is that emotion? Now, observe and describe the actual experience, the physical sensations of that emotion. My heart raced, my hands got sweaty, I felt really agitated and jazzed up. Describe your body, then observe and describe your expressive behaviors. What did you do? I said, I'm not putting up with this, and I slammed the door and I walked out. Okay. Oh, interesting. And observe and describe the after effects of all that on your functioning. Was that a good experience? Positive experience? Negative experience? Did it drain you? So you can learn a lot in your hula hoop because, hold it, Billy. How we use emotions is what I want to spend the last part of our time, because this is where it comes down to the ground level, and I want you to get bang for the buck. Right? Here it is. When we experience an emotion, our automatic assumption as a human being has been something external to us is the cause. Would you generally agree with what I just said? Generally. That's our normal understanding. I felt something and it caused it. You caused it. That guy caused it. This caused it. What you did or didn't do or said or didn't say caused me to feel what I'm feeling. Now, when that's an assumption as a human being, let's go back to Augustinian theology and good conservative theology. I'm going to say it's a good example of a tiltedness in a human being, a self-serving depravity, a self-serving inflated self. I'm the victim, you caused it. Okay, that's very sinful, depraved, bent, automatically. I'm leaning and tilting a certain way as an inflated self to protect myself. So naturally, when viewed this way, fault and blame are assigned to the other person. It's your fault, and if it's your fault, then you're responsible for what I'm feeling. Do you see already I've got the upper edge on you? Now, do you feel invited or do you feel defensive? You're already put off. Because my a priori starting point has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with you. For why I feel what I feel. And what I find human beings do in relationships is they let the emotion become the focus and take the forefront of their narrative. The story they're going to tell is all about the feeling that they're feeling. And they lead with that, thinking it's going to produce great relationships. Then they say it in the name of authenticity. I'm just telling you what I feel. Isn't that interesting? I don't know. Are we all supposed to pause and say, thanks for sharing? Because I'm really interested as a therapist, if a person goes to great lengths to tell you what they feel, I want to know who's supposed to do what next. Because somebody's supposed to do something. What do you want to bet? Now that you know how I'm feeling and what I'm feeling, I want to fill in the blank. Who's supposed to do what? Well, you need to stop doing that and start doing this. Oh, that's why you're sharing the feeling, is to change others. Number one reason human beings in a relationship share what they're feeling with another human being is to impact, infect, change, teach, influence the other human being. The number one reason one person shares exactly what they're feeling is to make an impact on the other human being, to get them to stop doing something or start doing something, is to influence and change the other human being, to get them to take responsibility or to do something. It's automatically a priori assumption. They don't even question themselves. It's your fault. I feel this way. You're to blame. We then absolve ourselves of any personal responsibility because we are blaming the stimulus, right? You caused me to feel this way, so I'm going to tell you about it. I blame you. I'm not the one who walked in and ignored me. I'm going to confront you and ask you, what's going on with you? Wow. The emotion that we're experiencing then becomes our self-justifying motivation for doing something. It leads us to an action. I have a right to act the way I'm acting because you made me feel this way. Do you see how neat this becomes? Now, we're human. We create then a self-serving, self-justifying story, exonerating ourselves of any personal responsibility, not even questioning why our data bank interpreted this way. Because we just assume, I'm right. How I see it is the way it happened. Have you ever thought that with 100% conviction and then found out you were incorrect? Yes. Yes, me too. This story is not about facts at this point or truth, but about a goal, a self-serving purpose we've chosen to construct based around emotion and interpretation of what's going on. All right? Thoughts, emotions, and actions then all sync up. Do you know the word reify? They strengthen each other. They strengthen each other, reinforce, and solidify a real reality that we create. There's the deadly triangle. I perceive and interpret. My brain selects a category based on my prior experience. It attaches to one, right or wrong. It attaches. I may misperceive. It attaches to a concept. I know what's going on here. Do you? Do you? Do you? I have clients in my office that actually look at the person they're in a relationship with and says, you're angry. Wow. Not, they're not saying it to me. They're saying it to their spouse or to a person in a relationship. I can tell when you're angry. Wow. Can you? Can you? Seems like you're angry right now. So once there's an interpretation, it creates an emotion, which then creates an automatic behavior which feels justified. Now the three come together and solidify and create a reality. You can't deconstruct it because they strengthen each other. The thought that I had is reinforced by my emotion. I reinforce the emotion by my behavior, which reinforces my thought, which reinforces my... Have you ever tried to break into a human being at that point to get them to see reason? Have you ever tried? It's impossible. As I've said to you, couples will go at this for 45 minutes in my office, and I cannot break in. I even hold my hand up. Hello, I'm here. Remember me? Hello, to which one looks at me and goes, oh, back out. I'm busy here. I'm making a point. Okay. Just thought, this is how you want to spend your time. Okay, all right. And then they get back into it. I cannot interrupt it because the triangle has formed. So each of these strengthen each other and create a self-serving, unexamined, closed system. My way of perceiving and interpreting is the right way. Until they calm down, till somebody calms down, gets their heart rate down, relaxes, and can see the situation differently, we're going to get a very powerful, powerful, powerful human response at this point. So then we use our emotions to take front and center stage of our story we wish to tell for an end goal we wish to justify. What we feel and experience now becomes the focus. Emotions now drive the behaviors. This is when people say, I'm just telling you what I feel. That's interesting. Because a lot of times, they're not even curious at the thoughts that are producing their emotions. You want to learn why you're feeling what you're feeling? No. Okay. You're just feeling it. Mm-hmm. And that's all that's important. That's right. I'm curious. Sometimes when people say, I'm just telling you what I feel, I tell them, I think you're telling me what you think. They go, what? I say, I think you're telling me about what's producing the feeling, wouldn't you be curious about that? No? My feeling is real. Look, nobody's doubting the reality of feelings. So now we're down to the point, feelings, emotions, can you trust them? No. You can trust that they link up to the story in our head, but aren't you curious about the story and how you got your story in your head that's producing this powerful emotion? No, I don't care about that. I'm just telling you what I feel. I think you're telling me what you think. And they're confusing these concepts, but all they know is they're feeling a powerful emotion, and it's real. Well, it is real. It's real. If you think you're going to die, you feel you're going to die. I know that. I'm not questioning the validity or its reality. I'm questioning its foundation. Isn't there a difference? Yes. I'm not questioning the momentary reality of how powerful a feeling feels. I'm interested in what's producing that. You should be too. A feeling is evanescent, ephemeral. It's felt and it's gone. What just happened? That's what I want you to be asking in your hula hoop. What just happened? I just experienced something. What was that? It was an interaction of me, inside me, some stuff out here. What does it tell me about me? Not what does it tell me about you. What does it tell me about me? What did it reveal in me? Where did my brain ping to, and where did I learn that? Could I look at that differently and come up with a different concept? I don't have to always feel that way because I don't have to always think about it that way. Now we're on to growth. So we share our emotions to influence, correct, and change others. We want others to take personal responsibility for what we feel because we say, you caused it. So when we emotionally invest in our own story, our own created reality, disconfirming logic, facts, and other perspectives, disconfirming data will not penetrate my own emotionally invested story. Logic cannot displace an idea that was not originally placed there by logic in the first place. Now I am emotionally on a roll. Katie barred the door. You ever experienced that? Sure you have. You have teenagers? It's powerful. No more, right? We're then prone to only see that which proves or confirms what we already see. Now I'm in a closed system. You can't break in because these three have come together. Later on, maybe we can deconstruct and say, what was that? What happened out here that my brain felt and then pinged to? Have I experienced that before and where? I wonder why I pinged there. Is that just like me to do that? That's when we can say to others, look, I don't fault you at all. I don't blame you. Really, I don't. I don't fault you nor hold you responsible. I'm curious why I had my own response. You didn't cause that. I'm not finding fault with you. Do you know if you say that, people will draw closer to you? People will draw closer to you and be immensely forgiving. If you blame them, they don't want to be around you. They're really tired of it. Let's have another talk about how you caused my emotions. No, I'd rather not. Thanks for the invite. I don't know what I said. But keep going. You're trying to tell me something. I did, didn't I? It was a stream of consciousness. I asked myself a lot of questions. Yeah, but I had a lot of, but it was before that. You're right, but you're asking the questions I ask myself in a self-reflection. How is it that I'm experiencing this? Why did my brain go immediately to this interpretation? Is that so like me? You didn't create that in me. Where have I learned this before? Where is the data bank that has reinforced this neuronal pathway? Why did my brain go immediately to that data bank and say, I know what's going on here and I feel slighted and inferior? Why did it ping to that? And really in life, most of the time, other people did not intend for me to feel any of that. I may have felt it. But it's an unusually cruel person who would purposely seek out to make me feel it and experience it. But that's not what happens most of the time in life. It does happen. It doesn't happen most of the time. So then I have to ask myself, do I really believe this person got up this morning and said, I'm really going to hurt and offend Billy? I doubt it. So if I felt it, wonder why I went there. Make sense? This helps us understand the categories in our brain and where we learned them and why our brain is pinging back to that. All right, now one last thing, and we'll start with this next week. Take a look then at an altered reality and what happens with, bless you, within a human being from the Adam and Eve story, which is ancient. You know the story. Indeed, as God said, you shall not eat from any tree of the garden. God didn't say that, by the way. Right? He said, freely you can eat from every tree in the garden except one. Freely, freely. Freedom is the focus. So he's twisting it. The woman said to the serpent, well, wait, from the fruit of the trees of the garden we may eat. But from the fruit of the tree which is in the middle of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it from it or touch it, lest you die. God never said anything about touching, but she added that. So the serpent said to the woman, you surely shall not die. Are you kidding me? For God knows in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be open. You'll be like God, knowing good and evil. So what did he just plant in her brain? Yes. Yes, lots of questions. So we'll stop with this, but I want you to see what happens internally. After this conversation, when the therapist has now led the client, do you see how powerful this is? If somebody sits in my office and I've never met another, their spouse or their person they're in a relationship with, and I say, oh, you're exactly right, they're a narcissist. What have I done? I don't do that. I've never met a person. I don't know. I'm just getting this person's description of this human being, correct? I would never. But that's the pull, isn't it? The pull of this person telling their story is for me to affirm and go, oh my gosh, your reality, absolutely. I don't blame you. Hey, get out now. Oh, are you kidding me? Call the police. Oh my gosh. Read this clinical textbook. Absolutely. I mean, once I feed that, I got to be careful. Don't do that. So now, after this has been planted, when the woman saw, what's her brain doing? It's choosing a category that now the fruit, the tree was good for food. That was practical. It was a delight to the eyes. It was appealing. Aesthetically, and that the tree was desirable to make one wise. Once these things lined up in her brain, the verbs happen in Hebrew rapidly. She took, she ate, she gave. Boom, boom, boom. So there's this gestation period where she's ruminating, ruminating, ruminating. Now, here's my point. The fruit remained the same, did it not? It didn't change in appearance. She passed by it every day. Did it look differently now? Did she perceive it differently? Yes. Did it externally change? No. Then what changed? Her perception inside of her changed. This is the very beginning in the Old Testament to lay a foundation. Nothing is an idol unless you make it an idol. Nothing. Nothing has a power except that we give it power. The fruit remained the same. It was the same every day. But her internals now changed. She perceived it. So it says when she saw now, oh, good for food, delight to the eyes, desirable to make one wise, then she took, she ate, she gave. She had a perception, an interpretation. She maybe felt something, and she led her to action. External reality remained the same. She changed within. That happens to all of us. And then it led to action. And I'm sure it had some emotions in there. Do you see how powerful inside our hula hoop? Last, and we're done. Trivia. Where do the verbs took, ate, and gave occur again in the Bible? That's right. What the first Adam could not do, the second Adam did. He took verbs that led to condemnation, sin, and entrance of fallenness into the world. She took, she ate, she gave. And Jesus on that night, fully aware of what was about to happen, took the bread, gave it, and said, "Take, eat." And another twist, it was desirable to make one wise. Right? So she began to covet it. What does Jesus say in the Gospel of John to his disciples the night of the Passover? "I have earnestly desired for this time with you." So all four of the verbs are there in communion. The second Adam takes these powerful verbs and reverses them and makes them verbs of redemption. He reverses the altered reality on that night that introduced sin into the world. Desire, took, ate, and gave. Reverses the whole story. It gives us a chance to experience new emotions, a new way of looking at things, for emotional flexibility. There's hope. To be continued. See you next week.